I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are author Jimmy Israel, columnist Ruben Navarrete, Johns Hopkins political science professor and blogger Lester Spence, and Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Wait, hold on a second. You caught me in a weird moment. Hold on. Okay, yeah, I just had to take a picture. I had to take a picture to send to my significant other. Never mind. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, welcome
to
the show.
But not to us.
Right.
We don't want to see it.
Please
unless it's of the flowers you are sending us.
How we doing, gentlemen?
I just had breakfast. You need to keep that to yourself.
Okay, well, on a related note, we're going to talk about football. So your boy, Minnesota Vikings quarterback Brett Favre, he's in the news again, Michelle, and has nothing at all to do with his play on the field, but his allegedly playing around off the field.
You know, I'm rather upset because, you know, I'm one of these Brett Favre partisans. I've been defending him to the max because, you know, he's in his 40s and still playing the game. And the allegations, for those who've missed it, are that he sent lewd photos and racy text messages to a game day hostess, an employee of the New York Jets, when he was with the team 2 years ago. The NFL is investigating the incident because it's, you know, this is an employee, and they're saying that he could face some sort of punishment for violating the NFL's personal conduct policy. And he talked about this on Wednesday when he was asked about this scandal. This is what he... And ask how this compared to some other off-the-field distraction that he's faced during his career.
I don't rank them. You know, you go through, you know, different things in your life. Football is a very tough sport, mentally and physically. And last year was great, almost too great. But I feel, you know, I woke up this morning and was eager, a little tired from the trip, but was very eager to get over here, and more so than last year at this time, to get this back on track.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks for that, Michelle. He did kind of like a little two-step around that question, huh? So, all right, if not for Brett Favre, not for his scandal, we'd be talking about something else. Now, Pittsburgh Steelers' Ben Roethlisberger, he returns fresh off his four-game suspension. So, Ruben, I'm going to toss it to you first. You praised the NFL for the Roethlisberger suspension. What should the league do about Favre?
Well, you know, it'll be very interesting to see exactly because of this employee angle, the fact that it is, you know, it's right up there. It's sexual harassment.
It is sexual harassment.
There are alleged, I mean, he's alleged.
Alleged, sorry.
But at issue here is something different than, you know, doing something with a fan in a nightclub or whatever. The story, you know, recently about the Mexican TV reporter in the Jets locker room. You need to cut that out. You need to stop taking those pictures. But you know, I think there is a difference there. We're about to find out what the difference is. But I am just struck and disappointed that these people, these big boys who never grew up, continue to do stuff like this and be accused of doing this stuff when they are the center of attention, when they have lives that little boys dream of one day having. You know, these are people who are, in the case of Brett Favre, headed for the Hall of Fame. And I think it's just disappointing. Whenever these stories come up, whether it's in politics with politicians behaving badly with regard to women or sports figures, I always think to Michelle and some of the women associated with this program, and I wonder to them, do they ever cease to be disappointed in us as a gender? You know, do we ever surprise them? They would say, I didn't expect that. You know, I think we crossed that barrier some time ago.
Thank you for asking, but no, I don't generalize. I think people, you know, I don't apply their behavior to any of you.
Pablo.
That's good. I mean, for me, I mean, I think, will he be suspended? I mean, Roger Goodell has wielded the personal conduct policy in a way that is fluid, to say the least. And so he's not going to abide by any letter of the law necessarily. He'll go by the spirit, and this certainly would apply. What we've learned this NFL season, though, as far as Ben Roethlisberger and Brett Favre goes, and have really learned throughout the course of football history, is that the best rehab center for PR is the field. And so if these guys play well, look at Michael Vick, for example, he's suddenly redeemed, even if it has nothing to do with his personal conduct. But for me, the takeaway from this is just further admiration of Derek Jeter, who is a guy who is maybe the number one star, celebrity-wise, in baseball, has been for a decade, and has done two things. He's never married and has dated seemingly every attractive woman he's come across, and is yet to be embroiled in a personal scandal. And so you wonder, why aren't these guys more like Derek Jeter? Why must they? I mean, again, not to comment on their personal lives, where they may have gotten married, but Derek Jeter is a guy who's basically the archetype and has been spotless, amazingly, literally spotless, which is stunning in this age of sports, and has gotten to do everything these guys have wanted to do behind closed doors and gotten success and marketing money and all of that they could ever dream of.
So it's interesting. So Pablo, in a sense, you're saying, why do you get married if you want to do all that? I mean, right. Well, for that, the marriage question wouldn't address this. Roethlisberger is accused of sexually assaulting a woman who had too much to drink.
Right.
So that's like thing one.
In a public bathroom.
So that, you know, being married has nothing to do with that. And in Brett Favre's case, he's accused of sexually harassing an employee, marriage. But you do make an important point, which is if you're going to be a player, be a player. Why do you feel you need to get all, you know? Why do you want to pretend? Just be a player. That's
exactly
how you want to roll.
Don't pretend. And also, I mean, there are lessons for Ben Roethlisberger here, too. Don't be a moron. I mean, there are very obvious things to do. And for Brett Favre also, it's don't take photos. Don't allegedly assault someone in a public bathroom. These aren't very hard rules of thumb. And it seems that only the cream of the crop, it seems, the Derek Jeters and only a few exceptions, have mastered those lessons, which is, in an age of millionaires, is very stunning.
Speaking of people being morons, the White House on Monday invited a group of black bloggers for a half-day policy briefing with some of the president's senior advisors. Strangely, the meeting was supposed to be on background, but apparently one of the bloggers did not get that memo, Michelle.
Yes, it's one of the blogs, ConcreteLoop.com, posted video of the president when he dropped by and addressed the group. It was recorded on his cell phone, so it's a little hard to make out. He's telling this group of bloggers how they can help the White House reach audiences that they may not be connecting with. So you want to? We'll try to play it for you. We'll see if you listen. See if you can hear it.
Websites, what you guys do every day, do two things. Number one, it allows us to reach audiences that may not be watching Meet the Press.
Wow!
Har.
Yeah, so, it's like I don't know, but there's something about him going to meet with ConcreteLoop.com. It's not a dig on them, but everybody knows that, you know, they're more famous for the crotch pictures than they are for, you know, political commentary. So it doesn't make sense.
But who isn't these days?
Right. I mean, but why didn't he go see Perez Hilton, too, right?
Right.
So, you know what, Lester?
Next week.
Right. Lester, you're a blogger, though you were not invited to this meeting. Were the bloggers wrong to post this video, or is the White House to blame for wanting to use black bloggers to spread this policy agenda?
I have to say, there are bloggers and there are bloggers. You know, all bloggers are not the same. I mean, Lester's point, Lester writes about politics. There was a gossip blog on that is more famous for promoting, you know, who Shaquille O'Neal is sleeping with than politics. So that's the question I would have for, you know, Lester. Go ahead, Lester. He didn't invite me either.
First, I'm a political scientist who used to blog. I'm not a blogger. Mm-hmm. I don't consider myself a blogger. Mm-hmm. And I do that not to play people who do blog, but just to make that firm distinction. Second, I think that there are bloggers who understand themselves to be journalists and who uphold the standards of journalism, and then there are bloggers who don't, right? So, and that's the distinction I think that perhaps the president didn't understand here. But on top of that, I think that there are times in which that specific rule should be broken, but unfortunately, because this black blogger thing appeared to me to be more of a means from the White House to buy off black constituencies than to engage in substantive dialogue, you know, we end up not really talking about that aspect.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, real quick. I think that it would have been interesting to see somebody like, say, Prometheus 6, Earl Donovan, somebody like that there at a meeting where he could both hold the president's feet to the fire and then at the same time maybe assist the president in his directives.
Ruben.
I think could have been done in a more serious way. I think that's the point we're talking about here. There's nothing wrong with reaching out to black bloggers or bloggers of any color or background. But to do it in a substantive way, there are people out there, you know, there are black folks out there who watch Meet the Press. There are black folks out there who blog and who have a journalism background or who have an academic background and who are people of substance. And I think that the criticism, if there is one, for the White House, is sort of playing the lowest common denominator, and in terms of the guest list. And I probably have less problem with the person who put the video up. I mean, my thing is, if you're videotaping the president, you've got your phone up or you've got something up, somebody knows this is going on. There's got to be somebody in the room, one of the president's handlers, who comes up to that person afterward and says, listen, I understand, you know, I saw you were videotaping this. Let's just make clear again, this is not to go out. So somebody dropped the ball on the White House end of it. I think the real story here is not that somebody broke, quote, the rules with regard to posting something. It should have been off the record. But rather, What is the president thinking exactly in terms of reaching out to a group of people that are frankly probably beneath him and beneath the office?
If you're just joining us,
it's hard, but it's fair.
It's hard, but it's fair. If you're just joining us, you're listening to we're having our weekly visit to the barbershop, and we're joined by columnist Ruben Navarrete, Jimmy Israel, political science professor Lester Spence, make that clear,
that's
not
right.
a blogger, political science professor who sometimes blogs, and Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre. Back to you, Jimmy.
Get it right, baby.
Thank you for that, Michelle, and thank you for that correction, Dr. Spence. So, Michelle, tomorrow marks the 15th anniversary of the Million Man March. Now, for those of you who may or may not remember the event, it was a day-long rally where African-American men peacefully gathered at the National Monument to renew a commitment to self-empowerment and uplift the race, I guess.
Yeah. Do you all remember? I know, Lester, you were there. Jimmy,
I was
you were there.
I covered it.
I covered it for Nightline back then. I'll just... I think for a lot of people, it was a very interesting event. It kind of combined this kind of political empowerment and spirituality sort of piece. And it was always controversial because it was organized by Louis Farrakhan, the leader of the Nation of Islam. And I have a short clip of him. Does anybody want to hear it just to refresh your memories
drop
about
it.
What kind of the tone was? Very different from what a lot of people had expected. Here it is.
I say your name. From this day forward, will strive to improve myself spiritually, morally, mentally, socially, politically, and economically for the benefit of myself, my family, and my people.
Thanks for that, Michelle.
Sure.
Wow. Yeah, I remember that. Dr. Spence, you were there too, right?
Yeah, I was there.
Would you go today? Because I'm not sure if I would go today. I'm going to go ahead and put that out there. For me, there was never a really clear agenda beyond atonement, which for me is a really personal, private, spiritual thing. And I don't know. What about you?
I think as I was there and taking it in, it was a beautiful thing. But the politics were bad from the jump, right? So it's
right.
not like, wow, 15 years later, we're not where we were back then. No, the politics were bad in at least two ways. First, in that it was really, really patriarchal, right? Well, we want to return to this place where men can be men, right? That's not really what we want. But second, we go to the seat of government. Everybody else is lobbying D.C. routinely for stuff, right? We go to protest ourselves. We go to ask for nothing. We go to apologize. I, like, hated it. Those politics were so backwards, I could throw up.
But why'd you go?
Because I didn't think I would ever see 1 million black men in the same place alone in my lifetime. And it wasn't about the violence thing. I mean, granted, my fraternity, we beat each other up for fun. And I've been around large numbers of them. And we can all get together fine, right? It wasn't that, but it was just about being in that space with 1 million other black men. I didn't think I'd ever see that again.
That was one of the reasons I went, too. And at the time, I was a newly minted Freemason, so I felt like I had a reason to represent. But it was one of them things where, you know, I went and I was hoping that I would hear, like, a plan of action or something. And I think I left with a T-shirt and a few pictures.
But to that point, though,
I had a big pie for the first time.
Well, really?
but
pies are the bomb.
But people did register. You could there was a theory though that there really was a Million Men March effect in terms of the propensity of young African Americans to register to vote after there was kind of a bump in the midterm. So there is some question that it did engage a particular group of people, younger voters, younger people particularly who haven't developed the habit of voting often have to be, you know, really interested to vote. And there is some sense that it did have an effect in terms of getting people acquainted with voting. There were many people out there registering people to vote at that time, as I recall. So I think that Jimmy asks the right question. Would you do it again today? And the answer seems to be no. Can I just ask the other guys, Ruben, do you think, you know, given that there have been so many issues pertaining to the Latino community now, do you think, I don't know, the male aspect sort of aside, do you think those kinds of kind of mass actions still have an effect in getting people's attention
well,
for things
I
like
think-
that?
Well, you hit on it. What's the effect, really? What's the purpose here? I mean, as Les pointed out, they weren't there to demand something of government. And maybe they are there in D.C. as opposed to, like, in Denver or Phoenix or Dallas because they want to get attention. But in terms of the empowerment message and the responsibility message, that's right on. That's right on. And I think particularly in the black community and the Hispanic community as well, but in the black community, I'm less troubled by the fact that it was only men, because I think oftentimes in the black community, it's men who are the problem. I think that women, a lot of black women, a lot of black women who are mothers taking care of their kids and raising their kids, want the men in their lives to pull their weight. And I think that there is a real problem there. We all know it to be a problem. And I think that if you can stress that message of empowerment, responsibility, taking responsibility for your kids, providing for your kids, all that stuff, I think that is that's very valuable. I think the problem with Farrakhan is he's very much obviously a mixed bag, because you have the allegations of anti-Semitism. You have the fact that sometimes he says things that make him seem mad as a hatter, you know. And I think that – but the empowerment message I think is valuable. And I think that there's nothing wrong with – actually, I'm going to disagree with Les here. Nothing wrong with taking a day off from demanding something from government and actually turning it on us and saying demanding something from ourselves.
Wow. Well, shoot, that, more to talk about. Lester might want to reach through the mic and grab your throat. But
since he beats up people in his fraternity, I'm not going to mess with
him. He might want to sort of paddle you. But before I let you go, I just want to end on a note. We don't have time to talk about it, but we can't end the shop today without talking about the rescue of the 33 men in Chile. It was such a remarkable story. It was watched kind of around the world. And to see these men being pulled to the surface intact and apparently healthy was quite a remarkable thing. And so I just feel in their honor, because this is the barbershop, we're going to play them singing the national anthem as we goodbye. Bye, guys. It's Jimmy Israel's a freelance journalist and author of the book The Denzel Principle. He joined us from WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete is a columnist who writes for the Washington Post Writers Group and CNN.com. He was with us from San Diego. Pablo Torre is a reporter for Sports Illustrated. He was with us from NPR Studios in New York. And Lester Spence is a political science professor at Johns Hopkins University who blogs. He was kind enough to join us from Baltimore. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Peace.
Yep, yep.
Unas brisas te cruzan también y un campo de flores.